that can lead to some false ideas. We think that everything we are is controlled by our genes. We might want to improve human society. I'm not talking about making bigger athletes or whatever. We might want to improve human society by selecting those with the best personalities, the best behavior patterns. And so eugenics grew up. And I think Charles Darwin must have been very frustrated, he would have been very frustrated, had he known the extent to which his cousin Francis Galton tried to use evolutionary theory in the development of eugenics to improve human society. But those ideas are still around. I was talking to a genetic doctor, a medic with genetic interest from Chicago, and he was saying that the Methodist Church in his suburb of Chicago was working with the homeless and disadvantaged. And that was a big mistake, because these people were like that because of their genes. There was no point in the church going out to work with the homeless and disadvantaged. And more recently, Toby Young, who's been rather in the papers on and off recently, suggested that poorer people should undergo IVF, and those the embryos that showed the more intelligence genes should be selected, and so they wouldn't be poorer. But if poverty had anything to do with intelligence and genetics. So those ideas are still around. If we believe we're totally determined by our genes, then those ideas almost come to follow. Here's a little bit of library. This is one of my favourites from The Guardian. It's a little while ago now, but they suggested that there was a poetry gene. If we are all our genes, then it's a poetry gene. We can imagine it being discovered a couple of years ago or so. And apparently a couple of years ago it was transplanted into a fruit fly and it produced that lovely little rhyming couplet. Very sad fruit fly. Today I fly and tomorrow I will die. Sad life being a fruit fly. And then we have a mouse that's now been genetically modified with the poetry gene, and it writes this beautiful haiku. Winter moonlight, a bree waits silently upon the sidewalk. A great haiku for a mouse. Just a couple of years now, we're expecting an orangutan to win the T.S. Eliot Prize for Poetry. Just by moving this poetry gene. The Guardian has been taking the mick out of this genetic determinism. It's there on the right. I've got a friend who's published a number of what he calls slim volumes of poetry. He thinks that an orangutan has already won the prize of poetry. he won't tell me who he's thinking of, but that's why. So we get mistaken ideas coming out of this idea of genetically determined. So what about it? Well, we need to think a bit about it. The brain is the centre of our thoughts, emotions, feelings, and so on. Without the brain, we wouldn't have these things. And obviously the way it works, the mechanisms of the way it works, are controlled by our genes. Genes control the molecules that make up our brain. And we've got, I'll put this in numbers, we've got 1 times 10 to the 11 neurons, 1 times 10 to the 11, and you can write that down later for your neurons. And they're all physically capable of interacting with each other. And so that means we've got 1 times 10 to the 123 possible interactions, which is more than the number of atoms in the universe. You haven't got enough genes to control neurons. And so although genes control the ability of the neurons to interconnect, they do not control the interconnections. They're being remade as we listen or as we speak. Our neuronal interactions are changing because of the environment in which we are sitting and learning. And so throughout our life, the genes don't change, but our brains do. So our brains are not completely controlled by our neurons. So this is the most complex thing we know about in the universe. And it's like that because we and Neanderthals possess a gene called the big brain gene. That's why our brains are capable of doing what they are. So the structure is controlled by genes. What they do is not. So we find that actually about 50% of our personalities, intelligences and behaviour patterns are based in our genetics. But the rest is all to do with nurture and environment, and I will include in that our spiritual environment. So that's one unwise use of our genetic information suggests that we are under the control of our genes. We are not. We have free will, and even atheist philosophers like Mary Warnock will want to push that very strongly. We have free will. And so we go back to this. In the beginning was the Word. Through him all things were made, and that includes us. We carry the image of God, which is not a genetic feature. We're spiritual beings who can relate to the Spirit of God. I like to say that the Almighty Creator of this amazing universe invites us to call him Dad, our Father in heaven. And the Holy Spirit can make changes in us. And so even people whose behavior patterns are prone to be difficult can be changed by the Holy Spirit. And I'm sure in our Christian walk we've met people who can testify to that. Okay, so just a bit of a pause, and then I'm going to go on to another area where sometimes we need special wisdom in thinking about what to do with our children. And I want to think about human disease. I could walk out of the area of genetic engineering, and that's a huge field that we really don't have time to talk about. But I want to think specifically about human disease. We know of about 10,000 diseases which are caused by changes in one of our genes. Changes in the physical makeup of our gene could a disease state. Most of these diseases are very rare indeed. And many of us carry hidden versions of the faulty gene, and we're not ill because you need two copies of the faulty gene to be unwell. But my guess is that just looking around a group of this size, that probably there are at least three of us in here, maybe four, that carry the cystic fibrosis gene. We're not unwell because we only got one faulty copy. So 10,000. And one of the things we're doing now, and I'm on the Regional Advisory Committee, is we are plotting the genetic changes that occur in human disease, including the changes that occur in some cancers. And it's a lovely thing on the radio this morning. People can have their cancer cells analysed to see its genetic change. And that's enabling us, in a very lovely way, to pinpoint how you should treat particular illnesses. So it's totally brilliant. And as we know more and more about human disease, we can also test. We can test people. We can test fetuses during pregnancy. And we can test what we have here. We have an IVF embryo, a test tube embryo. It's been created by test tube fertilization. And one cell is being taken out for testing. And that is now available on the NHS for people who are at risk of particular genetic passing on a particular gene. So that's great. That's really great. The question is to be asked, how extensive should this be? Are we going to start using this to select for people who are good at running, for example? Or who might be good for playing tennis? Not that we can. So we've got this ability to detect these genetic changes lead to disease. But, nevertheless, I think we need to exercise wisdom here too. We need to exercise wisdom in what sort of tests we apply, what sort of characters should we be testing for. Trivial diseases that a person can live with, or just serious ones. And at what point do we move from genuine health-related about more enhancement of human species. So wisdom again. But and to some extent, you know, you might say that there is this attitude, if the genes have told you, then that's all there is to say. But if you speak to a cystic fibrosis sufferer who's come through having been diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, who's now reached their 40s, they will tell you. They were glad they were born. And so it's not... The gene's not the be-all and end-all. Or if you think of Tanny Gray Thompson, the wonderful wheelchair athlete, her condition is not genetic, it's developmental. And somebody said, okay, spina bifida, that's it. Her parents did not. And nor did she. So sometimes we need to get past that. The genes have spoken, there's nothing else to say. And in terms of our care for people, it is true that in Britain, your postcode, except for people with a serious genetic illness, your postcode will give you more information about your general health than your genome. And so if you were to start out in the western suburbs of Glasgow, somewhere like Nilghai or Bearsden, and walk east for about 20 kilometres, maybe slightly more, you'll find life expectancy will drop by about 30 years, 25 years, across that spectrum. And we can find similar, less dramatic transects in most of our cities. Poverty has a much greater effect on health for most people than their genomes. And then over the world, hunger kills more people than TB, HIV, AIDS, and malaria put together. And the dysenteric diseases of African children are not really dealt with by our understanding of genetic illness. And so we are privileged here in the global north to have this knowledge, and it's wonderful that we can use it. But in terms of our understanding of the compassion of God for people, these are the people that we should be remembering. People at the east end of Glasgow, people in Congo, etc. So we need wisdom and we need virtue in using the information that science gives us. And I stopped the passage at where is wisdom to be found. As you read on through that wonderful chapter in Job, you'll find actually that it's following the Lord, it's the knowledge of God that gives you the sort of wisdom and the sort of compassion we need in applying our knowledge to wider society. Loving mercy and walking humbly with our God. It's a question of exercising those fruit of the Spirit that we read about in the Psalm. So in the beginning was the Word. Through him all things were made. We carry the image of God, and that makes it incumbent on us to treat each other as children of God. We're spiritual beings who relate to the Almighty Creator who made the DNA and the Holy Spirit.